You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Dane's been waiting long enough. His name is Dane Brugler. He was on the College Draft Podcast this week. I'd have him on every week if I could. He is an absolute stud. Check him out on Twitter, at DP Brugler. His rankings, his everything. Dane knows everything about these guys. Like, even kids I know from high school, he knows things about them in high school that I didn't know. It's unbelievable. Dane, it's Ross. Twice in 1 week, man. Good to talk with you.
You too. I got to tell you, that lead in, if this was a prospect interview, I don't know if that's it's a red flag or if I'm more likely to draft you now. I can't tell.
All right. So, Dane, you are young looking, but can you at least be with me and agree with me on 80s music?
Sure. I mean, I was born in the 80s and, you know, I went to plenty of 80s parties in college. So, you know, I've got my fill. Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I, like I said, at first I was a little, I don't know, this might be a red flag, but the more you got into it, I was like, all right, I'm with it. I'm liking this. So yeah, I'm with you.
You know what? You know why you should like it? You know why it's not a red flag? You want people that are passionate about things in life. And you know what, Scout Brugler, I am even more passionate about football than I am about 80s music. And that's the type of passion I'm going to have for your team if you draft me.
I love it. I love it. That's sold. Third round grade.
All right, so here's the deal, all right? Trey Lance played FCS football. I played 1AA football. He played 1 year as a redshirt freshman, and that's it. Then he played one game this fall, and now he's supposedly a top 10 pick. So he's got his pro day today. I guess the first question, Dane, is this like the most important pro day ever? I mean, where do you put this in the pro day all-time importance rankings? There's no combine. He played 1 year of FCS football.
Right. Obviously, this pro day carries a little bit extra weight just with, you know, you set it up, 17 starts at the college level. He's an unprecedented evaluation. There's no other way to say it. Obviously, we've seen players from the FCS level go to the NFL at quarterback, find success. Carson Wentz, Jimmy Garoppolo, go back to Steve McNair. But we've never seen an FCS quarterback with, you know, only 20 years old with such meager experience, but also have his talent level go to the NFL like this. So only 17 career starts and none of those starts against FBS competition. A lot of times, you know, he might have one game against Iowa State or something like that. Not with him. And because he's only a redshirt sophomore, we don't have the benefit of the Senior Bowl or, you know, see him with better competition. That's something that really helped Carson Wentz and Jimmy Garoppolo when they were coming out as seniors. So it's really an unprecedented evaluation. And that's not a reason to not draft him, but it does make it a little bit more of a challenge, especially because at North Dakota State, they have their offensive identity. They're not going to change just because they have maybe a higher level quarterback. In his 17 career starts, Lance averaged 18.6 pass attempts per game, while the team averaged 45 rush attempts per game. So this is not a quarterback that had to put the team on his back and make things happen. He did it plenty of times, but that's not how the offense is set up. So his pro day today is going to be well attended by NFL teams, just like his one game was back in October. And they want to see him throw the ball, see how the ball comes off his hand. But more importantly, it's going to be about the interviews for Trey Lance. Where is he mentally in his development? I thought North Dakota State did a really nice job in terms of getting him ready for this moment. Quincy Avery, his quarterback trainer, who works with a lot of NFL quarterbacks like Deshaun Watson, has, you know, he's told me how advanced he is for a 20-year-old. And that goes back to North Dakota State and what they do during the week in terms of putting more and more on his plate, preparation techniques, things like that. So on game day, he can set protections. He can make checks, do all these things, and have that freedom. So even though he is 20 years old, even though he has meager experience, I think teams are going to be impressed when they have a chance to sit down with him and really talk to him. Unfortunately, this year, it's just going to be all virtual. You know, in past years, they'd be taking him out for dinner last night before the pro day. We're out for lunch today after the pro day. Not going to have that opportunity this year. It's all going to be virtual. So just everything's different, and that's going to make it really interesting for a player like this who's, again, such an unprecedented evaluation.
So, Dane, I know you know this. How did he get to North Dakota State? I mean, he's 6'4", 220. I've seen him throw a beautiful deep ball. He's got a strong arm. I was reading the next gen stats. He's got four carries over 20 miles an hour. Like he appears to be a total physical freak show. How did he get to North Dakota State in the first place? How does that happen?
Born and raised in a small town in Minnesota, about 150 miles west of Minneapolis. So, you know, that's the first thing. He was really a running back most of his life until he got to high school and they moved him to quarterback, becomes a starter as a sophomore. And it kind of grew from there. He got better and better. But, you know, even as a senior, he was playing safety. He had 54 tackles and three interceptions as a senior safety, which you don't see a lot, you know, with these top quarterbacks. Usually they're quarterback only and that's it. They're going to quarterback camp since they were 10 years old. That just wasn't the case with Trey Lance. And so as a recruit, you know, a couple FBS teams did look at him. Western Michigan, they offered him right before signing day. Boise State got in the mix a little bit later. But at that point, he was already set on North Dakota State. And, you know, he goes there, red shirts, and then has that prolific redshirt freshman year where he had it was 28 touchdowns, zero interceptions. It was just a remarkable redshirt freshman campaign, led North Dakota State to the FCS national title. I mean, drew it up, textbook, what you want. But it's the only season we have to go off of aside from that one game in October. So the sample size isn't great, but the talent is sure intriguing.
Talking with Dane Brugler from The Athletic, at DBBrugler on Twitter. By the way, Dane's the only one that knows 54 tackles for Trey Lance as senior in high school. Nobody else knows that. 54 tackles, three interceptions. I guess the last one on Lance, because I want to ask you about a couple other guys, is just, is there a player in the NFL comparison that you like? And has there ever been another circumstance like this where a guy really only played 1 year?
You know, we've seen guys, you know, at the quarterback position play one season, you know, Mitchell Trubisky, obviously, you know, that was talked about during his lead up to the draft. But the one quarterback where you can draw some comparisons is Kyler Murray. When you think about the skill set, now Lance is bigger and Kyler is a little quicker. But in terms of the sample size, the number of starts, it's similar. In terms of, you know, on tape, you see a lot of one read and run throws. But you see a smart guy who's able to create. You know, he has the arm talent, but he also has the mobility. So I think there's some comparisons there just in terms of style. Now, again, Lance is bigger, not quite as quick. But, you know, in terms of what they did at the college level and what they could do at the next level, I think there's some similarities. So, you know, but this is unprecedented, really. When you talk about a player from the FCS level having such meager experience and not having the benefit of the Senior Bowl, you know, Carson Wentz, he was only a year and a half starter at North Dakota State. But him going to the Senior Bowl really helped himself. That went from he could probably be a first-round pick to all of a sudden he's in the top three mix and the Eagles are trading up for him. So not having the Senior Bowl, not having the combine, that's a missed opportunity, unfortunately. But again, that's not the reason not to draft him. It just makes a little bit more of a challenge when you try to figure out, okay, where does he stack, especially in a class like this where there's a lot of other quarterbacks with Lawrence and Zach Wilson, Justin Fields, Mac Jones. So plenty of options at quarterback in this class.
You mentioned that. I'm curious, is Lance your number three guy or do you have Fields ahead of him? It seems like everybody has Lawrence one, Wilson two. I guess not everybody. Sims has Wilson one, but most people have Lawrence one, Wilson two. Is it Lance or Fields three for you?
I think right now I've got Fields three, Lance four, but those guys are neck and neck for me. I do think Lawrence is the clear top guy. And then Zach Wilson, I've back in the fall, I kind of put it out there that, hey, this guy's got a chance to be the number two quarterback. And, you know, that's really kind of come to fruition. We talked to people around the league. They love Zach Wilson. They're really intrigued with what he can do and that skill set. And then three and four, that's where it's interesting because I think you have Justin Fields and Trey Lance both have a lot to offer, physically talented. I think it really comes down to figuring them out mentally. Where are they in their development? You know, with Justin Fields, what he was asked to do in that Ryan Day offense compared to Trey Lance, what he was asked to do in North Dakota State, very, very different. And so three and four to me are very close. And then you've got Mac Jones, who, you know, it's Mac Jones is difficult because, you know, you have you, if you list the, what you're looking for at the quarterback position, you know, the traits, you start with decision making and accuracy. Those are one and two. And Mac Jones has that. So, you know, I think you have to look at everything else and say, OK, is he good enough in these other areas where, you know, he's going to be a guy that, you know, can be a starter for us. And so each team's looking at that differently. Some teams that have a more established roster are going to be more interested in him, while some other teams that, you know, need more out of their quarterback, they won't be as high on the Alabama quarterback. So a really interesting dynamic and between these quarterbacks and how the teams are going to view them.
It's kind of crazy to me. You probably know some of this off the top of your head, Dame. Aren't there some like Power Five schools that haven't had a guy drafted at all in like 20 years at the quarterback position? Meanwhile, North Dakota State's going to have a second top 10 guy in like 6 years. I mean, give me a couple programs off the top of your head. I'm sure you know a couple that haven't had a guy drafted or drafted high in a long time.
Well, Ohio State was like, Ohio State had not had a first round quarterback in a long, long time before Dwayne Haskins. And obviously Ohio State is cream of the crop when you talk about recruiting, you talk about college level players, and they had not produced, a high level quarterback. I mean, you could go back to the 70s. It's interesting because, North Dakota State has really done a great job identifying these guys and then developing them. And that goes back to what they're asked to do, or what they're asked of their quarterbacks in terms of during the week and their preparation. Really, really impressive. So, there's a lot of programs, even before last year with Tua. You look at Alabama and the quarterbacks that they produced. Not a lot of high-level quarterbacks. Even during the Nick Saban era, Tua was the first rounder in a while. So, yeah, there's plenty of top-level college programs that have not produced the type of quarterbacks that North Dakota State has.
Here's what you got to do. You got to check out Dane on Twitter at DP Brugler. Check out all the stuff he's doing for The Athletic. You can hear him earlier this week talking about the guy that was a punter, basketball player only as a junior in high school that might get drafted at tight end in the NFL draft on the College Draft Podcast, part of the Ross Tucker Podcast Network. Dane, you are the man. I meant what I said. Thank you so much.
Anytime. Thanks, Ross.
There he is, Dane Brugler.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sports book, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So I haven't talked to this guy in a while, but he's a buddy. He's an absolute stud. Frank Isola, the Nets studio. I didn't know Frank was the Nets studio host. He can't say anything bad about him now. He's the Nets studio host for Yes Network. Now, you got to give me somebody objective, Fritz. He can't say.
I know. I love Frank too much. He's your guy.
Oh, my God. He probably has more jobs than I do, which is hard to do. Nets studio host on Yes. Sirius XM NBA Radio, the starting lineup host. ESPN, Around the Horn, and PTI contributor. And at some point, Frank and I were on the same show. I have no recollection when that was or what show it was, but I know we were on. Frank, it's Ross Tucker. How you doing, buddy?
Ross, I'm doing really well. I think we did SNY. It was either SNY or maybe a show on NBC. And I think back then, it was probably more than 10 years ago. And I think you said that Tom Brady will be done after this year. I can't see him playing beyond 30. I think that was your call, if I remember correctly.
I don't know if I said that. I do want to get your thoughts. Look, I wanted John, Frank. I can't stand the Nets, everything about them. Now, truth be told, like McLovin, I'm a Sixers fan. So we'll get into that in a second, okay? But I do need to start with the Patrick Ewing news because nobody knows, you know, James Dolan, Madison Square Garden, the inner workings of the Knicks, everything better than you. What is your just initial reaction to the Ewing comments yesterday? I'll give you a blank slate.
Well, I think First of all, I think Patrick was a little tongue in cheek. And I also think that after you win a game like that and he's walking and every two steps, he's getting asked to show his ID. I get how that could be frustrating, but the security guards are being told to check everybody. And in this world that we're living in with COVID, I'm sure they want to be worried about which groups of people are moving into a different area. I get all that. I'll tell you this, years ago, they had a rule at Madison Square Garden where they said no one, unless you have a pass, could you get to certain areas. James Dolan, who owns the place, rolled up, and there was a security guard there at the booth and would not allow him to pass. And he got upset, but the security guard, again, was just following the rules that he was given. To me, it wasn't that big of a deal. I think Patrick was excited that they beat Villanova, and he probably thought it was annoying that he kept getting stopped. Ross, if you go to Staples Center, the security guards there wear red coats. To get back to the locker room, you have to bypass three levels of security to show your pass. You know how many times I've walked into the locker room and the final security guard will say, "Well, look at the pass," and I'll say to him, "How do you think I got this far? You think I'm James Bond? I had to pass four different guys just to get here. You know I'm legit at this point."
All right, so here's a question, Frank. NBA coaches, right? Because obviously the players are the players, but NBA coaches, where do they have the pass? Like in their pocket, right? They have a pass, right?
Yeah, and it also, too, everyone's wearing kind of the same, now everyone's wearing kind of the same uniform, so it's not an issue for NBA games. But a lot of times the coach will walk off the court with a security guard. They don't get stopped. You know who ends up getting stopped a lot of times? Undersized NBA players trying to get into the players' entrance at games. Because a security guard will say, you don't play for the team. Say a guy like Carson Edwards on Boston, who is like 5'11". You could see a security guard saying, "You don't belong here." Patrick Ewing, I'm surprised that the security guards didn't know who they were, but I have sympathy for this is probably their second job, right, to make ends meet, and they're told, check everyone's pass. That's what they're doing.
All right, so was it a smart move by Ewing because we're talking about it and Georgetown hoops so much and the fact they beat Villanova, or bad move because it's overshadowing the fact that he probably got his best win as a college coach?
Yeah, that is a fair point. Again, I think in the euphoria of the moment, you have a million things going through your head. You just beat Villanova. You're going to get prepared to play either Seton Hall or St. John's. Obviously, that result hadn't been decided yet. And you have a million things on your mind. You're walking through the building where you played, and every 2 feet you're getting stopped. It's the kind of thing that the average person isn't going to be upset with. I think Patrick, again, and I've known Patrick for a long time, I thought it was a little tongue-in-cheek, his post-game interview, which obviously became a big story.
Right now, we know how good the Nets are. We know how talented they are. Has it made a difference among the fans? Like, is there anybody that you know of, Frank, personally, that is now a Nets fan that wasn't previously?
I think, Ross, what's happened is I think locally in New York, the Knicks are still the team. The Nets have become a bigger team nationally because of James Harden, former MVP, and then, of course, for Kevin Durant. You know, Harden, they traded for, he's already played more games as a Net than Kevin Durant has played. Durant didn't play last year. He's only played 19 games this year. But to your point, they're just an exciting team to watch. And doing the games is fun, especially when Durant was out there, because everyone knows that Kevin Durant is great. But when you see him all the time when he's playing, you have a greater appreciation for just how good he is. And the Nets, I'm watching the game. You know, I did the game last night, and Boston is a good team, and the game was competitive. And you catch yourself at some point thinking, the Celtics are going to have no chance to beat the Nets if Kevin Durant comes back and is healthy. No one in the East, I don't think, could beat them 4 to 7 times. And really, Durant is like, that's off the charts. Harden is brilliant. And then if Kyrie Irving, who is up and down, if he's going to play like that, engaged on both ends of the court, it makes the Nets that much better.
All right, we're talking with Frank Isola. He's got a ton of jobs, including being a Net studio host on Yes. You can check out his show here on SiriusXM.
I'm now a homer and a shill.
Yes,
for the Nets.
It's the starting lineup. So here's the deal, though, Frank. First of all, I don't like super teams. And look, We've had that argument. A lot of people know that. A lot of people don't like super teams. But especially this one. You know, Kyrie Irving is not a likable guy. Harden, in particular, the way it ended in Houston, does not seem like a likable guy. Even Kevin Durant, Frank, I'm kind of like, I don't know. You know, the burner account and couldn't beat him in Oklahoma City, so goes out to Golden State. Are there are they a likable team, or is this one of the most unlikable teams we've ever seen?
I'll say this about James Harden, and I did not agree with the way that he handled his exit in Houston. I didn't like that at all. And you had a young coach in Steven Silas, waited a long time to get that job, fellow Ivy Leaguer like yourself. And I didn't like that. He showed up for camp out of shape. He showed up late. Harden did. So to me, that was unprofessional. But since he's gotten to Brooklyn, the one thing about him, and this has been true throughout his career, the guy loves to play basketball. So he lives the life of a single guy. So he enjoys all the trappings of being a rich single guy. But when it comes to playing, he loves to play basketball. He's been incredibly unselfish. He looks to get other guys involved. And Kevin Durant is the same way. Kevin Durant very rarely takes a bad shot. He's unselfish. He defends. Kyrie Irving, I could see it, because Kyrie's going to say things that are going to make you roll your eyes. Last night after the game, he said, "I'm always about playing on the big stage." Well, hang on a second. Last year, the Nets went down to Orlando. You didn't go. So there was a big stage last year in the summer. You decided not to go down there. I get it. Maybe the league needs a team to be the villains, and maybe that could be the Brooklyn Nets. But I'll say this, in terms of the way that they play, especially Harden and Durant, they're likable on the court with the way that they play.
All right. Do my Sixers, who, by the way, are homegrown, Embiid, yes, Simmons, homegrown, do they have any chance to beat the Nets?
All right. So this year, Joel Embiid has done a couple of things. He got himself in better shape. He took care of his fitness. I don't think he's just eating two hamburgers and a milkshake every night. I think he's worried more about his diet. The big thing will be, can he make it through a season and playing most of the games? If he does, he's going to have a great chance to be MVP. He's averaging 30 and 15, which is remarkable. And right now, he's had five games of 40 points, 10 rebounds, five of them. The rest of the NBA combined has had four. That's how good he's played. I think they could do it. I love Ben Simmons. I don't care that Ben Simmons doesn't shoot three-pointers. The guy can defend. He's big. He's athletic. He gets to the basket. Doc Rivers has done a good job, and Tobias Harris has been that borderline all-star this year. Ross, remember, if the Nets play Brooklyn, the matchup problems, obviously, for both teams, the Nets have been unable to stop Joel Embiid. That will be a big issue if those two teams meet in the playoffs.
I certainly hope so. I'm even getting folks on chat row like Brian Guido say, has there ever been a larger group of unlikable players on one team or what? So shout out chat row. Fair or unfair, Frank?
Well, I understand it, because Kevin Durant left the small market Oklahoma City Thunder and he went to the Warriors, who were already an established team and were coming off a 72-win season. And this is what I don't get from Kevin Durant. You wanted to go to Golden State, and it worked. You were a two-time finals MVP. You would have won a third title had you not blown out your Achilles, and you left a great situation. You left Steph Curry, and you're kind of rolling the dice here in Brooklyn. Now, things are kind of set up for them, and if he's healthy, they're, like I said, they could make a run. But I think Kevin Durant, if you listen to him in these post-game interviews, he's been incredibly humble. He has a box score in front of him, and when you ask him a question about the game, he knows why the team won, why they lost. He's just very much engaged, and he knows, I'll say this too, Ross, he knows that if this doesn't work out, he knows it's going to be on him. So for me, he's been fully invested in this team.
All right, you mentioned Embiid and the MVP. I'm curious about LeBron, because for so long, people were saying LeBron MVP, LeBron MVP. It almost feels like, Frank, from afar, that LeBron's playing every game because he wants to win the MVP. And I like it. I don't like these guys that sit out games. I like that he's playing. But is he chasing the wrong thing? I mean, is he chasing the MVP at the expense of what might be best for the Lakers long term?
Well, you're definitely onto something, because if you want to be MVP, you have to go for it. And I think that's going to be the thing with Embiid. You have to play in the games this year. Especially, it's 72, and LeBron's only missed one. And I think LeBron, he obviously cares about his legacy. To me, he is setting an unbelievable pace. And I think in a year, and you were just talking about Tom Brady before, the reason why these guys can play at this level at this age is because, number one, they keep their bodies in tip-top shape, but they still want to win and they love competition. And I give LeBron a lot of credit. He's accomplished more than any active player right now in the NBA. And he still wants to win MVP. And he wants to win one more championship. And that's all that it's about for him. And it's somewhat refreshing to see. And as you know, these guys now, Tom Brady, LeBron James, they play the game at a different level mentally. They're just so much smarter than the rest of the players. So why walk away at a time when, let's face it, you kind of have things figured out? But I think it'll be interesting to see over the next 20 games, if LeBron wants to be the MVP, Ross, he'll keep playing. If there comes a point when he says, you know what, I'm not going to be in tip-top shape for the playoffs, I'm going to back off, I think LeBron will decide whether or not he's going to be MVP this season.
Check him out on SiriusXM NBA Radio, The Starting Lineup. He's on Around the Horn. He's on PTI. And he is the studio host for the most unlikable team in NBA history, the Brooklyn Nets. Thank you, Frank.
Go Penn. Beat Princeton. Take care.
Oh, you know what? I wish we could even say that. I wish that was even happening. It's such a bummer because as an Ivy League guy, the Ivy League basketball, that's like the one time you get a chance to play against the big boys. It really is a little disheartening that all these other mid-majors get their chance to be out there, but the Ivy League guys don't. Yes, Paulie.
Is that just Ivy League tradition that the football season is all about winning the Ivy title and it's so important? And I think that's why they do it, is because the Ivy tradition.
Well, for football, they want the Ivy League championship to be the be-all, end-all.
The pinnacle.
Right, but I was talking basketball.
Well, okay. For those who don't know, Ivy League football stops when the Ivy League is decided. They don't even have a playoff. It's a regular season thing, right?
Correct. You are not there. The Ivy League football champion does not play in the FCS tournament, which is a shame because there are years when Harvard or Yale, my alma mater,
Yale a couple years ago,
some good teams. Dartmouth, McLovin's Dartmouth boys,
Jay
have
Fiedler.
Had some good teams. I mean, they should have the chance. I don't understand the argument that we're trying to compete to be the best we can be, but let's not let these guys show they can be the best they can be.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.
How long are our breaks, Seton? It's like 4 minutes?
You'll have a good 5 minutes.
How many brats, like, if I sat here, if the rules were, I sat here until we went to break, and I had to be back sitting here at the start of the next, in that five-minute period, how many brats do you think I could eat? Yes, Paulie.
I would never doubt you, because I've seen you. But when you were at your peak, what were you, like 315, 320?
I used to go to training camp between 320 and 325, so I could play the season at like 315.
If it were on like a dare, how many bratwursts and buns and onions do you think you could have put down back then?
First of all, onions are gross and unnecessary.
Wow.
Yes.
Watch it, man. You're messing with some people here now.
Well, who am I messing with?
Wisconsin? Chicago?
Onions are... What's the point of the onion?
To make brats even better than they already are.
How does that happen?
Onions and mustard together? It's like, holy cow, it's like Brady and Belichick.
Onions are disgusting. My mom used to always put onions in stuff, and I'd complain, and she'd say, oh, you can't even taste them. And I'd be like, hey, Mom, why are you putting them in if you can't even taste them? What is the logic? Because really, I don't like the texture. The taste I can live with. I don't like that little extra texture of onion in what I'm trying to eat. Yes.
But are you saying like raw onion, or are you saying like fried onions? Fried onions are about as good as anything that exists on the planet.
McLovin's giving cheese me the steaks, head
so
shake.
You got cheesesteaks with no onions?
I don't care for onions.
Wow.
You guys are, everybody's giving me the shake.
Grilled onions on a burger? That's fantastic.
You know, Dan is a big anti-onion guy, too. So
is he?
Yeah.
Is he an anti-onionite?
He hates onions. Hates them.
All right, so you guys are making me almost want to try it.
Well, we don't want to force you. We want to have your choice.
I don't like the taste. I don't like the consistency while I'm trying to eat the brat. I don't like that change of texture.
We should move on before we lose another Wisconsin affiliate.
Anyway, I could eat a lot of brats. I'll just tell you that much right now. I don't need all the bread, though. I do need Andrew Brandt. And thankfully, I get Andrew Brandt every week on the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. I also listen to the Business of Sports Podcast. Andrew's up there in Frank Isola category. He's a columnist for the MMQB. He hosts the Business of Sports Podcast. He's an executive for Vayner Sports, Gary V, former Packers exec, speaking of brats, former ESPN legal and business analyst. He does stuff at Villanova, and he's got the best newsletter out there with his Sunday 7, which I enjoy every morning, every Sunday morning, getting that stuff. Andrew, long time no talk. How are you?
Ross, man, 48 hours. How do we deal without being together? Here we are again. I appreciate all the intro. I always say I have a lot of jobs, so I don't have to have a real one.
I love it. So, Andrew, here's my question. You spent like 10 years in Green Bay, but I also know you are Mr. Healthy. Like, the guy does triathlons. The guy's got ripped six-pack abs. Did you partake in brats when you lived in Wisconsin?
Well, only when I had to. I didn't want to be this antisocial guy that shows up and they're only serving brats, and I would go ask, hey guys, you got any tofu? You know, that wouldn't have gone over well. So I played the game. But yeah, I mean, listen, Wisconsin is where I got into triathlon and running and biking, because you talk about a hardy group of people. I mean, there are people running 350 days a year out there with the crampons on their shoes and the ice and snow. So, yeah, I mean, they don't eat that healthy, but they can be very healthy out there.
What's your policy on onions in general?
Onions are fine. I'm good with onions.
Okay.
I got no issue with onions.
Yeah, I don't like onions. Onions, I don't detest them quite as much as mayonnaise, but they're up there. Mayonnaise is still, I mean, at this point in life, I just feel bad for people that like mayonnaise.
Mayonnaise is bad, and beets. Beets is my thing. I'm not going near beets.
Yeah, and Tom Brady's not going near onions or mayonnaise because he knows what's up. You know what's up. So we're seeing a lot of this, Andrew. Brady signs a four-year deal, but they're saying it's really only one more. Saves the team $19 million against the cap. What is all this going on?
Yeah, it looks like Tampa's using Brady to get their cap relief. You know, we see this around the league right now, Ross, where teams are bonusing out players. And when you bonus, you can prorate out the bonus for the years remaining on the contract. So you lower your cap this year. So Brady's making 25, basically takes 24 of it, puts it into a signing bonus that's prorated, adds a few years to the contract. Some of them are voidable, which mean they're just dummy years there for proration purposes, and they lower the cap number by $19 million. I mean, again, you know me, Ross. I always say, well, that you're gonna push out pain, and you're going to have pain down the road, but Tampa's managed the cap well. It's teams like the Saints and the Steelers that have this constant push out and constant restructuring, and it's going to haunt them. You're already seeing that with the Saints having to cut so many players right now. And it's a hard time right now. I mean, this is it, Ross. We have never seen a cap decrease. I've been around the NFL 25 years, and here we go. And teams are slicing, dicing, whatever they need to do to get under.
So, you already said it. You don't like this. You don't like when teams do the voidable years. You don't like when they push stuff out. But I guess in fairness, Andrew, they thought the cap would be like close to 210. It's 182. So if there was ever a year where it's understandable, this is the one, right?
Yeah, because people are going to rationalize, yeah, we'll get the big cap increases with the big TV deals. I guess my point is this, Ross. There are, I don't know, 15, 20 teams, maybe 15, that are not doing this, right? And I am saying they're going to be more advantaged, maybe short-term, certainly long-term, by not doing this. Getting ahead of the curve, having a lot of cap room, being able to load cap and cash the same way, where you have flexibility down the road, you're not starting uphill with huge dead numbers on your cap.
Talking with my buddy Andrew Brandt, at Andrew Brandt on Twitter. He's got the Business of Sports podcast, among a bunch of different things. So here's my question about the Chiefs. Yesterday, Andrew, the Chiefs released Eric Fisher and Mitch Schwartz. They both just had major surgeries in February. Now, I don't know if you were ever the guy that had to call and cut guys. I know you had great relationships with agents, and obviously they're doing it to save $18 million against the cap. But wouldn't you feel a little dirty calling a guy to tell him you're firing him a month after he just had a major surgery?
Yeah, and let's talk about the legalities here. You can't cut a player who's injured in terms of having remaining time on their contract that's going to pay them. Now, here we are in the off season. So if this was the season and you cut a guy and an independent doctor says, you know, he's got 8 weeks left on his injury, you got to pay him. But now there's no game for 6 months. So I guess you can legally say, well, by that time, you know, you're certainly going to be ready to play. So we don't owe you any money. But you're talking about the morality of it. And that's tough. I mean, Mitchell Schwartz, Eric Fisher, I mean, these guys are integral to their Super Bowl runs. And it's just unfortunate. But that's where we are right now. I mean, you know me, Ross. When I hear things about player empowerment, I'm like, hello? Have you seen February and March every year in the NFL? You're seeing this happen. You're seeing these massive cuts that are coming, have been happening, and are going to cut hundreds of millions of dollars, just vanishes.
Is there somebody to blame for that, Andrew? Is there somebody to blame for the fact that a guy can have an Achilles tendon surgery in February or a back surgery in February and be fired in March? Because, I mean, that doesn't happen in the other sports.
No, I mean, why it doesn't happen in the other sports is you can do all that you just mentioned, Ross, but you got to pay them. And what we're talking about is lack of future guarantees. And I've, you know, it's a long involved subject, but it's two parts. One, can the individual agent do something about it, which they don't seem to be able to do past like 2 years? You know me, 2 years and we'll see. And then can the union do something about it where they would say, hey, you cut a veteran before the season, you still got to pay him, pick a number, 10% of his salary. You know, that could be negotiated in, but that's never been done in football, and the lack of guarantees make it so different than other sports.
So let's get to Russell Wilson, and I guess on some level, Deshaun Watson as well.
Yeah.
You were the point person with the agents. That was your job for the Packers. I see the helmet behind you. You're wearing green.
Yeah.
What would you be doing right now? What would you be saying to their agents? Because Deshaun Watson clearly wants out, and it kind of seems like Russell Wilson does too.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned it. That's always the gateway for me with players was the agent, because you have to, like you mentioned, I work on those relationships. When I went on road trips and I'm in Detroit or Dallas or Denver, I'm like, I look up the agents in that area and have a drink. You know, it's these kind of situations where you need that. And so you're going to Russ's agent, you're going to Deshaun's agent saying, what's the deal? How can we fix it? Now, I've been on this show with Dan. I was wrong on Wentz saying that Deshaun's not going anywhere. I am not saying that on Russell, Ross, because the team, you know, the team has said in Houston, he's our quarterback. We're not trading him. The team in Seattle has not said that, which to me is like, oh, I mean, that is bigger news to me than Russ saying he's, you know, picks these teams or whatever it is. So until the Seahawks say he's our quarterback, that could happen. So then it becomes, I'm looking at this, Ross, how do you get value? How do you get equal value for Russell Wilson? I don't want draft picks. Who wants draft picks? They're not going to amount to Russell Wilson. So now you're talking about, man, can he get the best offensive player, the best defensive player on the team, and all those kind of things to add up. But yeah, it's like, what's the relationship there and why can't it be fixed? That's my question.
If you were Ryan Pace, the Bears GM,
yeah,
is there any amount that's too much to give up to try to get Russell Wilson? I mean, that's one of the four teams he said. He's not going to the Saints. He's not going to the Cowboys. He's not going to the Raiders. It's really just the Bears. I mean, what are you willing to give up for him if you're the Bears?
You know, I just said the opposite. I would give up a lot of picks, but if I'm the Seahawks, why do I care about picks? You know, none of the picks is going to amount to Russell Wilson, even if combined. So would he give up Khalil Mack? Would he give up his best offensive player? You know, not Robinson, because he's not signed. He's a tag player. Would he give up a bunch of draft picks? That's why it's hard for me, Ross. I can't even come up with a package for these teams. Like, if I'm the Seahawks, you know, I'm like, you know, keep offering. Just keep offering. It's not good enough.
Andrew,
so that's why I think he won't be traded.
Yeah, I got to ask you about the Dak contract, because
yeah.
I talk with you every week on the Ross Tucker podcast, and I think on Wednesday you said something I've never heard you say before. I asked you what you thought about the Dak contract. Tell all the Dan Patrick Show listeners what you thought about Dak as it relates to him and the Cowboys.
He won. You know, every marker, he set a new record. First-year money, $75 million. Three-year money, $126 million. Four-year money, $160 million. Three-year money is twice the three-year money of Patrick Mahomes' first 3 years. And the most important part of all that, Ross, he's a free agent at age 31, or the Cowboys are leveraged once again at age 30. So I just think, like, every marker you look at in a contract, he won. And I'm amused by the people that said 6 months ago, oh, he hurt his leverage. You should have taken the deal. He got hurt. Doesn't matter. He won. I've never said that about, maybe not never, but I don't say that often because management usually wins.
Well, I win every time I get a chance to talk with you because I learn a bunch. Love getting an expert opinion such as yourself. Check him out on Twitter at Andrew Brandt. Certainly check out the Business of Sports podcast. Andrew, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure, Ross. Newsletter, andrew-brandt.com.
Thanks. Love it. Andrew-Brandt.com. Free newsletter Sunday morning.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.